warm bed. You just remember what your old past said. Boy, you got a friend in me. Yeah, you got a friend in me.
You got a friend in me. Hello, and welcome to another edition of the Community Living Show on the NCRA Radio Networks and our full hour edition on CITR 101.9 FM. I am, of course, the operator for Kelly. And we have Michael Rubin. How are you doing, Michael?
I'm doing quite well.
We're going to have a special guest by Carrie Gibson, but looks as though she's not in this morning, so...
I know she's been saying that she has somebody to bring in. And,
yes.
I was just confused on the day, the second week in a row, so...
Yeah.
I guess we'll have to get a hold of her.
Yeah, when we get a chance to get around for each other. So, yeah, so our email address, if you want to send a comment of our show or make further future guests as well, you can do that. Email address is communitylivingradio@gmail.com.
You know, we always welcome guests that are looking to change something in the community. Just rose above. And regardless of disability, you know, so
yeah,
you know, or maybe
it could be other health too.
Yeah, or maybe they discovered an issue within the community that needs to be solved.
Exactly.
You know, let us know what you have.
And it's not just autism. It could be Down syndrome. It could be people that are blind, people who have their legs cut off or on a wheelchair or on any type of disability for that matter.
Yeah.
Including hands. I know there's a thing called the war amps for that matter. And I know for a fact, I've seen the ads of the war amps where kids do the accident stuff, but it's not just kids, but there's also adults do accident stuff. So the hands are replaced by robotic arm or robotic leg, those kind of stuff. So that's another type of thing we try and talk about as well on the show. So any type of disability or any type of illness too.
Our scriptwriter for the Marketing Anvil and Illustrators MD. Mm-hmm. We effectively call him Santa Claus, but his name is Dale Gillespie.
Dale Gillespie.
used to play Santa Claus in the Rogers Parade.
Yeah.
Until the arthritis got so bad in his back that he basically is shut into his home.
Oh, wow.
You know, so I've been trying to encourage him to come on our show live. And talk about is like he's a great script writer. He actually has done work for Hollywood, and you know, really a fun guy. Lots of stories to tell. So you know,
absolutely.
So somebody like that, you know, if you know somebody, have them send us an email so we can contact them. Another project that somebody's, they're a writer, and they wrote a book. One of the characters is called Handy Dart. So I'm trying to get, encourage that person to come on and speak with us about their books and what they want to do with their project, you know? So lots of fun stuff that can happen too.
Oh, yes.
So...
don't mind me. I'm just trying to figure out what other stuff I need to put into the show as well. So
yeah. Well, I'm sorting through. There's There's a group in Madison, Wisconsin, that I've been in touch with, and I'm still trying to sort of how to actually get them to talk about what they do in Madison. It's called the Mutual Aid Networks.
The Mutual Aid?
Yeah.
Explain that.
Well, they have a number of different pilot programs that they actually help fund.
Yep.
And some are... are disabilities. Some of them are social justice. It's like it's a very broad spectrum. So it's like I'm trying to narrow it down so that I can actually see what we can talk to them about, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And maybe we could advocate for some of these some similar programs to be instituted here in Vancouver also.
Okay, thanks.
You know, yeah, so but it's a matter of figuring out everything that they actually do. See what programs would, you know, what the coolest programs are,
right?
So yeah. Well, so there's another idea, and actually the person's name is Stephanie Rierich.
Yep.
And she, like I said, she's in Madison, Wisconsin, and some of the cool things that, you know, figure out, like, the cool things that people do, you know? You know, they're always looking for the person who wants to speak out for the community, right?
Right. So I've got one thing on Autism Live now. I've just set up a thing if you want to listen to that. And again, it's all on Autism Live. You can, and it's broadcast on YouTube as well. So this is from yesterday, for that matter, for the Wednesday edition of Autism Live, and hopefully you'll enjoy it. All right.
Okay.
Come right back. I know it's over an hour, so we're not going to play all of it. So there you go.
The advice and opinions expressed by the host of Autism Live and her guests are meant solely as suggestion and should not be in any way construed as child-specific advice. The Center for Autism and Related Disorders advises working with a board-certified behavior analyst who has experience with autism before starting any intensive behavioral intervention. Any choices you make in determining your child's treatment are completely at your own discretion.
Good morning and welcome to Autism Live. I'm Shannon Penrod and we are webcasting to you live from the Warner Center in Woodland Hills, California. This is the new home for the Center for Autism and Related Disorders, their headquarters. It's also the new home for Autism Live. We're thrilled to be coming to you on this Wednesday morning. I know many of you write to me and say that, like me, Wednesday is your favorite day of the week because of the lineup that we have here on the show. We start with Dr. Doreen Grampichet. She's here with us this morning and is going to be answering your questions live on the show. And then our second hour, Let's Talk Autism with Shannon and Nancy. Regrettably, Nancy Allspaugh-Jackson is not with us here today, and we continue to ask for and appreciate your prayers for her husband, Reed Jackson. He is still in the hospital, and so she is with him. But we have fabulous guests today for you, Sharon and Dylan Aragon. Dylan is a really remarkable young man on the autism spectrum. He is an actor and a singer. In fact, he is an actor who has been featured in some of the adult videos that help adults get skills that are done by CARD. He's done a lot of other things. He's going to be talking with us today about how he's finding college and some of the things that he's working on, and Sharon will give her insight as well, is what it's like being a mom of a son who's out there performing and getting it done in college. I'm looking forward to that. But we want to remind you that everything we do here on the show, we really want it to be interactive with you. We enjoy having a conversation with you. Love it when you guys write to us. And there's many different ways that you can do that and many different ways you can watch the show. So Kelby's going to show you some of the varied ways that you can tune into our program and be a part of the conversation. I'm going to remind you that our homepage is autism-live.com. Much to do when you go there. There's a new blog there this morning with, I promised you, a healthy GFCF recipe for fall. It's there on the blog. Please sign up for our email list. You can get the monthly viewer, the monthly news guide, and then the weekly viewer guide. All of that is free, and we don't share your information. So please sign up for that. When you're on the homepage, though, you can be watching the live show or the most recently recorded live show. Or you can click on the playlist that's up in the upper left-hand corner and you can watch the last 100 shows and scroll through them and fast forward and pause. It's a wonderful, wonderful feature. But to the side of all that is something we call the live feature. If you'll put your cursor in the box that says your question, all you have to do is type and hit enter. You do not have to log in. There is no password. There's no username. There's none of that. Kind of instant gratification, although we think there's about a 2-minute delay. So ask your questions early in the program or in the segment so that we can refer them to our varied experts that are on the show. But today we have the best expert on the show today. Dr. Doreen Grandpuche is here, and my friends, it is finally time for Ask Dr. Doreen. Dr. Doreen Grandpuche is a visionary in the field of autism. Now you can ask her questions on Ask Dr. Doreen. Welcome to Ask Dr. Doreen. Dr. Doreen Grandpuche is here with us on this wonderful Wednesday morning. Thank you for giving us your time.
It's
we always appreciate that. We like to remind everybody, because sometimes we have new viewers, in fact, every day we have new viewers, that Dr. Doreen Grandpuche is a true expert in the field of autism. She's been working in this field for 30 years. I always want to mutter that, but it's I don't know why, because it's a wonderful thing to be proud of, how many years that you've been working in this field and making a true difference. She is, I believe, the preeminent expert in autism in our universe. I was going to say the world, but it goes further than that. And beyond being an expert, she is a visionary. She is somebody who is able to see where the trends are going, what's happening, what families will need. I always compliment you on your amazing perspective taking, because I think there are so many voices in the autism community, and I think you do a better job of hearing all of them and sorting through it and saying, you know, here's how we're going to move forward, and here's what's needed. So I appreciate you.
Thank you. I was just calculating. It's 37 years in this field. 37 years. Good God.
No one would believe that. There's a painting underneath her bed that's aging for her, like the picture of Dorian Gray. Yeah. But
same initials.
That's true. Okay.
Pretty
spooky. Now you just freaked me out a little bit. Yes, because one would believe that.
No, yeah, thank you. That's nice. I was recently just unpacking some boxes in my garage, and I came across photos of when I was at UCLA. Uh-huh. It's just amazing. You go back and you think about the things we were doing back then with kids, and this is like the late 70s. And we have just come such a tremendous far way. It's unbelievable. It's just astonishing to see how much we've learned.
Well, I can't wait until somebody makes the movie of your life. I believe that that's coming. The first time I met you in person, my life had already been greatly affected by you. But the first time I met you in person, you invited me. You were unveiling skills.
Oh, okay.
And so that was the first time. And I remember sitting in this amazing conference room, and you were talking and showing this thing, and I had this moment where I went, this is going to be this what's happening right now is going to be depicted in a film at some point that will probably be on HBO, will be able to say, I was there. At that table. It was so exciting.
Life has a lot to unfold. We'll have to see.
I believe that that's coming. But in the meantime, we're here, and lots of people have needs.
A lot of questions.
Lots of questions. and thrilled that you have an opportunity to answer them. But we always like to remind people that in this format, even though we have the instant, semi-instant gratification of you guys sending them questions, there's no possibility that any expert of any caliber could give individual specific advice. So that won't be what Dr. Grampuchet is doing. But I think what's so valuable is that you have an opportunity to ask a question. She has an opportunity to share with you her knowledge about autism. And then that helps you to have questions to take to the professionals that are able to see the individual in person.
Right.
So we thank you for that. And I know you guys, I don't share with you enough how people write in and say how amazing this is for them and how much
they've
learned.
That's wonderful.
I need to share that more with you. I need to be better
yes,
about
please
that.
Yes, do. I need the reinforcers.
But everyone does. And and how much
thank
it means
you.
To people. So I want to dive right in here. I love the fact that you guys are finding all the different ways to write to us. First question came in on Facebook on the card site.
Yes.
And we appreciate that. You can write questions in other places. So somebody wants to know, hi, can I ask your advice on how can I get my autistic child to try new foods? She likes processed food, which isn't really good for her, so I want to opt for a better option. Any ideas?
Right. So I'm going to give you a very brief summary of how we do feeding programs, and, you know, it's one of those things that I hope is on our IBT site. There should be a module on feeding because it's a procedure and it's a pretty straightforward and easy procedure. You just have to get certain elements right. So let's assume that one of your child's favorite foods is French fries. And instead one of the things you want your child to eat is, let's say, carrots. So you have your preferred foods and your non-preferred, but the non-preferred are the ones that you really want your child to start
eating. So that's the carrots in this scenario.
Right, exactly. So, you know, in this case, I think your child is on processed foods and so I would suggest that you first select a series of healthy foods that you want to teach your child to eat. And what you do is you essentially use the processed foods as reinforcers. So you will have a large amount of the reinforcer first and a very, very small amount of the healthy food because that's where you're at now. So
okay.
Right now your child's eating only French fries. So you'll have a whole plate of French fries and you'll have perhaps one bite of a carrot. Now, keep in mind that in a lot of cases, feeding involves other things. It's not just preference. For instance, children will have a very hard time with the texture of the food. Like, they can't eat crunchy foods. They can't chew. There's a lot of other factors.
Right.
And if those are involved, then it's a slower process. And instead of starting with carrots, you'd be starting with mushed, tiny amount of carrots. So it really has to do with what the feeding issue is. There could be swallowing issues as well.
We will be back in a moment with more on Autism Live. That was podcast on Wednesday, November 18th on YouTube. And we will be back on the Community Living Show in a moment.
Do you like friends? Well, we like you. So become a member and get a Friends of CITR card. Not only does it make you special, but it gets you all kinds of deals with our friends at UBC and the West Side, like Australian Boot Company, Dentry's Pub, The Bike Kitchen, Limelight Video, and more. Visit CITR.ca for more, or come check us out in the Nest.
Without the help and support of our friends, we here at CITR wouldn't be able to bring you all the great music, art, cinema, and culture that you love. Thanks to the long-standing support from the Rio Theater, we are able to keep you informed on all the great artists, films, and everything else coming to town there. For all the current information about who and what's playing at the Rio Theater, visit their website at www.riotheater.ca.
Yes, you're tuning in to Community Living Show on the NCRA Radio Networks and on CITR, our flagship station. So, Michael, what you been up to for the past 20 minutes or so while listening to our podcast?
Well, I was looking at some of the people that are actually following us on Twitter.
Yes, we are.
Some of them
got about 234 followers. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And some of the things they like dealing with, like things like diabetes. You know, there's all different conditions and things like that people are talking about here on Twitter. So it is. I know because we have a few disabilities that really have touched our lives very closely. Autism and fibromyalgia and arthritis. You know, there's so many other things out there that that affect people's lives.
Right.
You know?
Lots of things.
Yeah. So. You know, when I see here things like diabetes and things like that, people posting things to us, you know, and we try to mention some of it. Sometimes when we're looking for things to talk about on the show, we actually go through through our Twitter to see who posted something really noteworthy.
Absolutely. You know, one on Canadian diabetes for example. They just posted it about 13 seconds ago. And Disabled Sports USA, they just published something now. So,
It looks like Make-A-Wish Canada has posted something to us. Something about popcorn kernels, I guess. I'm trying to see what the actual, we're so hot. So grateful for help making Kinsey's wish come true.
Lots of stuff on Make-A-Wish.
Lots of stuff, you know. One is actually from the university that we're sitting in right now. UBC.
Yes, of Medicine. Course. Yes.
So, yeah.
Any type
so
of
that's what, that's kind of what I'm doing while that's playing is like looking for clips that we can actually talk about that are noteworthy and things like that.
Sure.
And it looks like Autism Speaks actually does follow us.
That's good. That's good. So back to the Autism Life.
Yes.
All right. We'll be back.
Let's assume none of that exists. What you do is you give the child one bite of a carrot and then they can have a plate of French fries. And then tomorrow you reduce the French fries by one and you just, you know, increase the carrot by a very, very small amount. So over the course of, let's say, 2 weeks, you are now giving the child, a whole carrot cut up. And their reward is just one French fry or something. And then you will be able to actually eliminate the reward and add, let's say, peas. And now the child will have a whole carrot and one or two peas and receive a French fry, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So you will now, so what you do, like anything else in ABA, you start with a large amount of reinforcer and a small demand. And then you gradually increase the demand and reduce the reinforcer to the point of normal life. So in normal life, we get to have our food reinforcers as long as we have some of our not-so-reinforcing foods, right? So generally speaking, you'll have, let's say, a protein and a vegetable and a carb. And the carb is usually the one that everybody loves.
Right.
But, with children, it's not uncommon that they'll do the ones they don't like first so that they can have their favorite afterwards.
Right.
Or, you know, with our kids, we always say you have to eat your food before you get your dessert.
Right.
That's because certain foods are reinforcing. So you always want to make sure there's a fair balance, but you want to increase those things that the child doesn't want to eat and just reduce the ones they like to eat that aren't good for them.
Yeah. I'm always struck by, because I'm always thinking, how would I mess this up? Quite frankly, that's the page I'm coming from. How would I mess this up? And I know what I do is that I move too fast.
Either you move too fast or you're impatient. Or
that too.
Or you just don't have time.
Yeah.
Or you convince yourself it doesn't matter. I mean, there's so many reasons that we don't do this with our kids. But It is a very easy procedure. You know, a lot of times I say the reason ABA works is not because parents can't do it. Parents can absolutely learn to do all of ABA. It's mainly because we don't do it. We don't have right. time. We don't have the ability to be that sort of step-by-step and logical, and we get emotional about it and all yes. these other things. You know, one of the things that happens in feeding programs is that parents get very worried that their child won't eat because right. the child will generally just reject. But if you are sure that there's, you know, there's a certain amount of the French fries and they are dependent on having a bite, just a very small demand, you'll always be successful. If you do it slowly
yeah.
and do it methodically, you will be successful.
Yeah, I think the lie we tell ourselves is, this is going to take too much time.
Right.
And it takes a little bit of time, day after day after day after right. day, which adds up to your whole life is better.
Absolutely.
And if you were to take all the little slivers of time it took, it takes much less time to do the intervention
right.
than it does to deal with what we're already dealing with. It's just one of those crazy mind things that we tell ourselves, the lie.
And plus we're tired. I mean, and parents are tired, you know? I mean,
and overwhelmed.
Absolutely.
yeah.
I mean, I remember, even to this day now, my kids are, my youngest is 14. But, you know, as I'm going home, I'm like, oh, God, it's like 6 o'clock and now I have to do 2 hours of French. You know, and I'm like so tired.
Yes.
But that's, we're just tired and we try to avoid it. But yeah. truthfully, if you do it regularly, it's less and it makes the rest of life easier.
I just 2 nights ago said, boy, I'm just loving going through seventh grade again. that was my little comment.
You have to
boy,
go
it's even better than going through fifth
yeah,
grade math
me,
again.
Shannon,
oh.
I'm going through it three times.
Oh.
You realize, you know, it's so exhausting. It
oh,
is.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, we're going to move on to the next question, which came to us via email. So we love it. You guys always have the option of emailing me directly, or you can, some of you are emailing our autismlive@gmail.com, and that's where this one came in. My son is 3 years old and received a diagnosis of ASD and SPD at 2 years, 9 months of age. We are starting ABA therapy with a wonderful provider. We have been encouraged to stop other therapies for now so that there will be no confusion in techniques used mm-hmm. with him. It makes complete sense to me, but our OT and ST feel strongly that he needs all of this. We can always add services back, but I know firsthand that OT and ST teach signs that ABA will not, etc. I want to get an opinion from a trusted source and found your website. If you would provide any information, I would be so grateful. And they left their personal information, which obviously we don't share with you at home. But thank you for doing that.
That's wonderful. So that's a pretty easy a question to answer, and it is a common question for parents. So yes, I would also recommend that at this point you stop the other interventions, unless there can be full agreement on how the interventions proceed. And you gave a very good example. A speech therapist may go the path of teaching sign language. And in ABA, generally, we don't do that. Generally, we will go the path of teaching picture exchange communication system or some iconic system, which isn't sign. And there's a lot of reasons for that. There's, you know, sign is a recall process. You have to recall certain signs. And then even if you learn all of those, you're limited to other people who can read sign. With a picture exchange communication system, you will go to from there to an AUG device to actually vocal speech, and it is recognizable by everyone, and it is a recognition system where the child can just recognize elements that are present. So it's easier to teach a PECS type system or a visual system. So having said that, people have different preferences, but if you were to try to teach a child sign and PECS at the same time, it would confuse them completely and they wouldn't learn either one. So you gave a very good example there. There's many other examples. You know, for example, I might in an ABA program require a certain length of sentence once I've taught the child words and actions. I would want, like, let's say 3-word phrases minimum or 5-word phrases minimum because I'm expanding their language. And the speech pathologist may accept less. And that'll cause confusion. That'll cause a lot of delay. So, and occupational therapy really, in my mind, is not necessary for every child. It really just has to do with a child's needs. I also don't think speech is necessary for every child. I think you need to really establish what your child's needs are. If there's a very significant need for sensory integration / occupational therapy, it won't conflict necessarily. I have a lot of our kids doing OT, and it doesn't really conflict with what we do. I don't usually like to start programs with a speech and language pathologist and ABA at the same time. I do like to do ABA first. You should see, if you have a good provider, pretty rapid advancements and progress with your child in the first 6 months to a year. I'm not sure if you'll ever need to go back to speech. You might if the child doesn't develop vocal expression. Speech pathologists are much better than ABA people at producing sound. They have a lot of techniques that ABA people are not trained in, such as prompt technique, which helps the child initiate sound. So if that becomes an issue, you will need to go back to speech. Later on, with sort of some areas of pragmatic speech, you might need some help with speech. There's other aspects of things. You know, if your child has apraxia, you will definitely benefit from speech before doing ABA. But if your child, if I were you, I would just start with an intensive ABA program and see how the first 6 months go and whether or not you need the other services. And having said that, yeah, I think that's all I wanted to say.
Can I throw a couple of two cents?
Sure, please.
Just to give you another perspective, though, a lot of parents were saying for a long time, don't say no to the OT and the speech no matter what, because if you say no to it, then you've refused the services and it'll be really hard to get them back. Mm-hmm. But I want to add to that, because we've learned more since those days, that there is a way that you can say, we don't have time in our schedule right now, and not sign off on your IEP saying that you've refused those services.
Right.
You can be very smart about it, because usually it's your school district that's offering the OT
that. Right.
And the SP. Sometimes it's insurance.
Right. Well, now, when, you know, about 5 or 6 years ago, it was always the school district.
Yeah.
But now it's almost always the insurance.
Okay.
So things are changing in that parents are accessing these services through different funding sources, and that's the key, you're right. If it's an IEP, if there's an IEP involved in these services, you have to be very cautious and say why you want to delay the start of these
right.
services.
But you don't want to sign off. A lot of times parents were,
that's
this
right.
is the old thing, was the parents were given something and they signed off and they could never get it back.
Right.
If you're just smart about that, that doesn't have to be a thing.
Right.
But I think what's key as a parent that makes my heart beat a little bit faster is prioritizing.
Mm-hmm.
Because everybody who's advising you, they're going to be prioritizing their thing.
That's true.
And saying, well, you got to have the OT because it's important for this, that, and the other thing. And the speech and language pathologists are going to say, you got to have this because whatever. I just think it's important, especially early on, that you prioritize the ABA, and everything else is secondary.
Correct.
Everything.
Absolutely. And I don't want to be arrogant about it, but truthfully, you should be following to the T an intensive early intervention program. Your child is very young. Congratulations for getting in that early. And I wouldn't worry about those other things right now. Think about this. You're talking about a program that has an intensity of about 40 hours a week versus other services that are about 1 to 3 hours a week.
Yeah.
So you can't go wrong here.
Right.
But the only area where you can go wrong is if you do less than 40 hours of ABA. If someone is telling you to do 20 or 25 hours right now, that's a mistake. Your child is 3. That is the age where you need an intensive program. And school isn't included in that, and other therapies are not included in that. We're talking pure ABA, 40 hours. That's
Absolutely.
Your best chance.
Okay, great, great advice. We're going to take a short break, and then we're going to come back with some of the questions that you guys have just sent in this morning, so stick with us.
It's every parent's...
Actually, we're going to take a break as well.
Yeah.
While they're doing that, we're going to do that as well. So stick around. We'll be right back.
Understand more about fashion. We asked CITR student executive and fashion expert Jonathan Q what fashion means to him.
Like, it's just aesthetically something that's so ostentatious. Typically. I mean, because of course, I mean, it's also, you know, I mean, when you say fashion, I think people are talking explicitly about consumerism. As opposed to someone who buys, like, you know, let's say someone buys a clothing piece.
If you really want to know more about fashion, come on down to CITR in the Student Union Building of UBC and pick up some of our merchandise à la mode. Nous avons t-shirts, sweatshirts, socks, and coffee mugs.
But it's also very aesthetically gripping.
To keep you styling in support of the station you love. Isn't that right, Jonathan?
Cool. Well, actually, is it? Because, I mean, you know, I was going to say because of the cultural vacuum that we exist within, but then, you know, really, fashion today is kind of derived from the European idea of couture, and that's been around for centuries.
The UBC Ski and Snowboard Club is a non-profit, democratic, student-run organization dedicated to promoting the sports of skiing and snowboarding and the associated lifestyle.
We endeavor to make skiing and snowboarding accessible and fun by actively seeking out the best deals and discounts for our members, as well as organizing trips to local ski areas and setting up numerous social events.
Come on one of our legendary trips and explore the glory of riding in British Columbia. Or join us at the bar to discover the true meaning of debauchery. Ask your roommate, ask your parents, ask the RCMP. Who has the most fun at UBC? You'll get the same answer. The Ski and Snowboard Club.
Yeah. Joining the Ski and Board Club is easy. Come by our office, sub 115, anytime with some money to become a member. Your membership gives you access to all the deals offered by our sponsors, cheap beverages at our parties, an invitation to all club events, and of course, only members can come on the trips.
Old or New Testament?
I think the New Testament.
The question is, Pilate. You remember Pilate from the New Testament?
Pontius Pilate. He fiddled well.
Yeah, no, well, just a minute. Let me ask the question, then you can give me the answer, okay? Did Pilate want Jesus to be crucified?
Pontius Pilate washed his hands of it.
So did he want him to be crucified?
Yeah.
No. No. No.
Well, tune in every Friday afternoon, 3:30 to the Night Watch Show on CITR.
Well, find a good church. It'll help you.
This is Community Living Show here on the NCRE Radio Networks. And also on CITR 101.9 FM. I'm, of course, Kelly on the controls. Michael, how have you been so far?
Good, good.
Did what?
Well, one of the reasons why we broadcast the Autism Live, they give really good advice.
Absolutely.
And
they do.
They advise parents to dish out a lot of patience.
Mm-hmm.
You know, parenting, anyone that has a disability takes a lot of patience, you know,
mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
On any type of forms, yes.
Yeah.
All right, so we're going to go back to the form again that was broadcast yesterday, Autism Live, and of course, we're not going to play all of it right now, so if you want to check it out, it's on YouTube, Autism Live, search word Autism Live, Wednesday, November 18th. Yesterday's podcast. Enjoy.
It's every parent's desire for their child to have a great start in life. Yet there is a condition affecting more children's lives than pediatric cancer, diabetes, and AIDS combined. Autism strikes one in every 150 children.
Today, one in 110 kids in the U.S. will be diagnosed with autism. That is a huge jump from 30 years ago when it was one in 30,000.
Startling new report finds the number of children with autism is skyrocketing. The Centers for Disease Control estimates one in 68 children has a form of autism. Now that's a 30% increase in just 2 years.
I think what kept me was the feeling that, you know, I would have a parent come to my office late at night at UCLA and just fall apart. And this is a long time ago. There were much less back then in terms of services and knowledge and so on. And I would just sit with the family and the parents and walk them through and try to take away some of their fears, you know. And at that point I realized, I think the thing that's actually most important to me is that process. Mm-hmm. I mean, thank God that I've been very, very lucky and blessed to have so many incredible clinicians join me along the way, mm-hmm. and just develop CARD in such an amazing, magnificent way. That I could, you know, for me it was more really about how can I help the families, mm-hmm. what can I do for the moms, the dads, you know, mm-hmm. it is just, and I feel like, you know, there's no way I would ever really know because I haven't had my own child go through this, mm-hmm. but I've experienced it with people mm-hmm. a lot of times.
Hi, this is Megan. I'm in first grade all by myself. My teachers are so fabulous. I like to read books. I like to go to my friends' birthday parties. I like to invite my friends to my birthday parties. I once had a sleepover with a friend. I like to have play dates with my friend. I'm the best reader in my class. I like to go to the library. I like to read different series of books. And here's how I learned to do all these things. By my card friends and Dr. Grant Pichet. Thank you, card friends and Dr. Grant Pichet.
Welcome back to Autism Live and to Ask Dr. Doreen. Dr. Doreen Grampuchet is here with us and she's answering your questions live, and that's a wonderful thing and we're grateful to her. Now, we had a question that came in this morning. It says, question for Dr. Grampuchet. Can you please ask her to talk about ASD diagnosis for adult women? I have a 7-year-old with autism that has been receiving wonderful intervention from CARD for a few years now. I've been obsessing over his treatment and therapy since he was diagnosed. Spreadsheets, research, conferences, etc. I recently came across a chart for Asperger's in women, and I was just blown away that I could relate to most of it. Social anxiety, poor eye contact, sensory issues, missing social cues, mutism when upset, and have learned how to put on an act when I need to blend in. How can I pursue a potential diagnosis, and what help is available for adults? I'm almost 30 and live in Los Angeles. First, sending you a hug, right?
Absolutely, yeah. Many hugs. And kudos to you for recognizing certain things in yourself. I can tell you that, you know, and I always go back to this, and it's sort of important to pay attention to this because we all see various things in ourselves, and if we were to take them to an extreme level, we would all be diagnosable in one way or another. The key to a diagnosis is that it causes the individual to be disabled in functioning in their family or at work, like in their society, basically. So, you know, I've always used this example that someone could drink 10 bottles of scotch every night, but as long as they go to work, have friends, have a healthy relationship with their family, then it's not diagnosable. You know, it's not considered a disability or disorder. A disorder, by definition, means something that prevents you from functioning well in your society. Now, so let's start with that. So you have already gotten to a point where you are functioning. You have a child, your child's in a program, you're doing very well, which, by the way, I'm glad your child is with us. But you're just seeing certain things that you would like to improve upon because you feel that you have social anxiety, which is never comfortable. And you feel like there are certain social situations where you don't feel comfortable, you feel fake, or like you're faking it. And that's perfectly fine, and you can work on those things. I'm not sure a diagnosis would benefit you in any way. There's just certain things you want to work on, and that's perfectly fine. Now, the best way that I would suggest you work on these things is that you You can use your child's skills account to actually ask your supervisor at CARD to give you access to your child's skills account, and then go into the sections that have to do with executive functioning and cognition. Those two domains, those two areas, will have a lot of ideas for you in terms of how. So you just read through them and see, you know, the advanced ones, and read through them and see if you have difficulty with any of those, and if you do have difficulty with any of those, then I would suggest that you actually practice those types of activities yourself. There are many, many books, a lot of really good books written by Tony Atwood on the subject of Asperger's and how you can use various things in your environment as tools to help you cope with the environment. Because you mentioned social anxiety, I think it would benefit you if you talked with a psychiatrist and considered an anti-anxiety medication. I think something like 80% of Americans are on anti-anxiety, which is the same as antidepressants, by the way. And you might find that to be very, very useful to you. There are many causes for anxiety in our lives, obviously, and just taking the edge off a little bit would perhaps help you get through life much easier. And if you didn't have the social anxiety, a lot of these other things that you're experiencing might go away. So it is more about dealing with the anxiety. I often talk about how anxiety is part of autism. Like, I see so much anxiety with our higher functioning kids, and I think it's a big factor. So, you know, whether or not it's there because you also have Asperger's, or it's just anxiety leading to a lot of these feelings, you need to deal with the anxiety. And there's a multitude of ways to deal with anxiety. There's a whole section on anxiety in our, where is it? It would probably be in our maybe social curriculum, I'm not sure. So you should really look at those areas and see if those help. But get in touch with us again if I haven't given you enough resources.
And I think, you know, there's an expression in the autism community that we say, puppies don't have kittens. And it's a way a lot of autism parents relate greatly to certain aspects of where their children are on the spectrum. And I always say we're much closer to our children than maybe all of us are willing to admit or accept. And, you know, my husband and I have conversations where we will say to each other, oh, well, that's where you're on that spectrum. Right. And then he'll say to me, and that's where you are, right? And we mean that lovingly. Mm-hmm. But it's just very interesting to notice, because it is a big spectrum of different considerations. And everybody has something. Right? It just doesn't add up to you being not able to function,
right,
and having that disability. But I applaud you for looking at this and recognizing that there are things to work on. And I can tell you, when I first sat and read through skills, I was like, oh my gosh, this is so good for me. There's so much that I learned, and I'm still working on having done skills. And as somebody who used to teach seventh grade, I said every single junior high school student should have to go through the executive functions curriculum. Every single, I'm not talking about kids on the spectrum, every single human being would be more productive if they had that as part of seventh grade curriculum standards.
Honestly, I know, I agree. It's just, there are so many really good techniques. It's just techniques for learning and for self-improvement and self-awareness. And I mean, this is someone who's already very aware.
Yes.
And you'll get a lot of tools there.
Absolutely. So yes, write to us if you want more information, but what an inspiring question.
One other thing is, Shannon, I think in the past we've posted numerous shows we've done on anxiety, and I think you would maybe enjoy looking at those as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Good question. I want to take something from Twitter now.
Sure.
Somebody wrote in and said, how do I stop my 12-year-old son with ASD from throwing and breaking things? Not in anger, just to watch it fly.
Right. So, and that's a very, that is a common thing, and I really commend you as a parent for having noticed that your child enjoys the observation of things flying, which is kind of interesting. Often we think, it takes parents a long time to figure out that they just really like how it looks. So it's a hard thing to control, but the way to control it is that you need to replace or have certain periods of time where he's allowed to do engage in that activity or some form of that activity, and that would then kind of be his release period, and the rest of the time he's not allowed to. So the way that a behavior analyst would do this is they would essentially take a measure of how often does he do it during the course of the day, because the idea would be to reduce it, to limit it to certain times. So let's say he does it all day long, and then what we would do is limit it to from this time to this time only, or from, you know, that's kind of the concept. And during that time, initially you would allow him to throw objects in a safe environment, safe objects. So not like, you know, you would make sure that he's in an environment where perhaps he could throw things like pillows, stuffed animals, tissue boxes, things that are not likely to break anything. And also you'd want him in a room where there's no glass, you know, those types of things. And that will... So that when, during the times when he's not allowed to, if he needs to do it initially, he would ask for a break. He would ask to go to his throw room or whatever you want to call it. And then over time, what you do is you allow him to go to his throw room, not every time he asks, but on a particular schedule. Initially, he'll be asking and going, but then later what you'll do is you'll say, okay, we're going to go in 10 minutes, and you'll set a timer, and then he'll go in 10 minutes. And then what you do is you have a break every hour, let's say, or every 2 hours where he's allowed to go for 5 minutes. And then eventually what you'll end up doing is saying, okay, you can only do it from like 6 to 7 p.m. at night and 8 to 9 a.m. in the morning, or whatever it is that you decide. And in this, at the same time, so this is how you kind of get rid of it in his daily life. It's a process, and that's why it's better to have a behavior analyst help you with this shaping process. But the other aspect of this that will happen over time is you'll try to find normal life things that he can use to throw. For instance, you know, put him in basketball. Teach him how to throw a ball into a hoop, because that's something he will enjoy doing and it's very functional and normal. Find things where it is appropriate for him to engage in this activity and it's not a big deal. Like, even if he's like in swimming, he could certainly like throw a ball around in a pool, or if he's on the playground, you can use this as throwing a ball to other kids and so on. So, you know, you can use some real life situations. Even video games these days, there's a lot of video games that will allow you to see that kind of projectile of throwing an item. In fact, what is it? Angry Birds, for instance, yeah, is a game that has to do with throwing. So find things that are sort of more normal, adaptive, and he would be allowed to do those, and then restrict him in other environments.
Wonderful. And you have used this technique on many children. There is an amazing drummer who had a stim.
Right.
And you morphed that into, he's a world-class drummer, was playing at the Hard Rock Cafe this last Sunday.
Crazy.
Just saying.
Yeah.
Okay. And, of course, that is it for the show. Had to adjust the microphone here. So if you want to continue on with the program is Autism Live. That's the podcast on YouTube. That happened on Wednesday, November 18th, which was yesterday. Yep. Thank you, Michael.
Thank you, Kelly.
Do you have a show on tomorrow?
I'm probably going to dig up an old talk from out of the archives. It's just a matter of which one. We'll probably just do a replay tomorrow.
Yeah, tomorrow. I'm not going to be in tomorrow. So that's the Co-op Radio show, the half hour show from 2 to 2:30. The Co-op Radio original show that we originally started on, and of course started during the 1990s when we first started, and of course it used to be called the Self-Advocacy Show. So thanks to the original people, Dave Sherritt, Lori Sherritt, Richard McDonald, everybody who originally started doing the show. Now it's just the two of us, me and Michael, so
we should encourage him to come back for a Christmas special or something.
Do something special. On some sort of a community living special or something.
Yeah.
That'd be great. All right. This has been the Community Living Show, and we'll be back again next week on our regular hour show on CITR, and we'll be back again tomorrow, so stick around.
And keep sending those emails and tweets.
Yes. CITRLateNightShow@gmail.com.
All right.
Have a great day.
Listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.
Discorder magazine has been supporting local music for over 30 years. Thanks to the long-term support of the Rickshaw Theater, Discorder lives. favorite bands are playing at the Rickshaw Theater, check out their calendar just behind the cover of Discorder magazine or at rickshawtheater.com.
Are you hosting an event on campus? We are UBC's Emergency Medical Aid Team, a UBC peer programs, and we provide free first aid coverage for events organized through UBC clubs and organizations. We cover events such as Storm the Wall, Day of the Longboat, and Residence Life events. We also offer tailored workshops about a variety of first aid and safety topics to the UBC community. If you would like to request coverage for any of your events, find us